All right, everyone, welcome back to the show. And today, I'm very excited to be talking about a craze which took over the UK and has crossed the pond and is going transatlantic. It's a new decade, if depending on who you ask, a new year. And the most exciting thing about that, as far as I can tell, is a new season of The Circle. And to talk about that, as well as the whole franchise in general, I have, once again, the great Melissa Sullivan. Mel, how are you doing?
Hello, hello. Joining the Circle Chat. Thank you for having me in. Circle Chat is open, and it is open in the U.S., everybody. Officially, not through the unusual ways we all had to find ways to watch seasons one and two of the U.K.
Yes. The nice thing about this is we have the freedom to just talk to each other without insisting and begging the Circle platform to do it for us, although we have had a lot of technical issues with this so far, so maybe the Circle would be better at handling all of that.
It might be better. I think that I would be perfect for the Circle because I unusually use the text to type a lot while I drive. So I constantly speak in my car as if I'm talking to the Circle. So I think that does make me uniquely qualified.
Does the text to speech thing recognize hashtags or are those off limits?
You know what? I actually don't think I've tried to do hashtag. I have done emoji, not aubergine emoji. But I think I've done like a smiley face or something. So I'm going to have to really test it and push the limits. So that can be my New Year's resolution.
Does it handle thick British accents well?
I do have my Siri set up to have a British accent. So I'm going to have to guess yes. I would have to assume so.
Well, okay. So $1 million question or £1 million question, I guess. What kind of British accent is it? Is it mine or is it the Circle announcers or something in between?
Something in between, kind of like a dull, it's a dull lady. She's not that, you know, not that exciting. She's just kind of like a classy gal. She's not as witty or anything. Just very straightforward. Just reads my text.
Just like a received pronunciation, generic newsreader voice.
Yes. Has a lot of hard time pronouncing very basic things. You pronounce the word where my grandparents live. They live, their street name is a place, which it calls piace.
Very classy. Dead
serious. So yeah, she's a pretty classy lady, just like all the contestants of British reality shows.
Yes, well, we will dive into the wonders of the Circle cast very shortly. But let's talk about the show and just its basic premise and how you came across it quickly. Because for me, I just went on Twitter one day, as I do many, many times a day, and suddenly my entire feed seemed to be absolutely buzzing, as the cast members would put it, about The Circle. And I had no idea what this was, but I kind of pieced together the gist from what I saw. And then eventually I tried it out myself and just was hooked, was just binging this, as much of the season as I could in one sitting. What was your story there? How did you come across it and how did it hook you in?
Exact same. I went on Twitter one day and suddenly everybody's talking about The Circle, The Circle. I have no idea what anyone's talking about. I'm like, what have I missed? And then I just kind of, somebody had posted, I think, all the links on a like Daily Motion. And then I watched all of them in, I think, like 2.5 days, like really just kind of gave up life. But it was worth it because the show is amazing. I have tried to get any person I know to give The Circle a try. I'm not doing so hard, not doing so well yet, but I think the US version is going to get everybody on board, and I'm very excited.
Yeah, and the basic premise of the show, it's almost startling how simple it is, and because of that simplicity, it's not really that original. The concept of take a bunch of strangers, put them in a house, isolate them from each other, and have them communicate through some kind of medium, that's been a staple of reality shows for decades now. Why do you think that in the form of The Circle, it's finally catching fire again?
The idea of the internet and anonymity and being whoever you want is what makes The Circle so fascinating. And another thing about it is the idea that it is a popularity contest and that the people who are catfishing on the show, there's part of you that's rooting for them to catch the catfish or rooting for the catfish to get away with it. But there's also these players who realize, like, it doesn't matter if you're a catfish because your goal is to just make a popular person. And if you're getting along with them and they're nice to you, like, let them continue. And that seems to be a common theme on both seasons. We know who you are or aren't, but we still like you. And that's a pretty neat concept that you can be whoever you want to be.
Yeah, the show has been very popular in the UK, and that might be because it speaks to not just the British love of reality television, but also those kind of larger social themes about privacy anonymity, trying to fit yourself into groups and so on and so forth. I wonder if for the US hardcore reality fans who have picked it up and are now devouring it as fast as they can, maybe part of it is that so many of the shows that we have loved for so long, like Survivor and Big Brother, are increasingly kind of like iterating on themselves and becoming this a Hall of Mirrors version of themselves, where to stay original, they have to keep switching it up and adding all these twists and making the basic premise of the game that much more complicated and that much more distant. Whereas The Circle, it is what it says on the tin. It's a very simple concept, and they just put the people in there and let them do their thing. And there are some twists from time to time, and they have some games and so on to keep it livened up. But by and large, it feels a lot more organic, even though the basic premise of the show is that you can be as fake as you want to be.
Agree. And the twists and changes, especially from seasons one to two, obviously the main change being season one, you gave everybody like a 5-star ranking, a rating, and then season two was a ranking system. But that change was made to help not allow the game to be beat and sort of to make sure that the players were on their toes and changing, and that this was a way to evolve the game to a next phase. And while season two also had the twist of, you know, Judy and, oh my gosh, I should have written down her name, but whoever Jack and Beth, the older woman.
Oh, Joyce. You know,
Joyce. How could I forget? Joyce is a legend. Oh, by the way, that is probably the phrase I've now picked up, probably the hardest that I use all the time, which is I call everybody a legend. Ella has rubbed off on me. Everyone's a legend. They would hate me in there because I would call everybody a legend.
You can pick up a lot of British slang by watching the show. If you want to learn the language, you know, this is a great way to do it. The same way that a lot of people will watch foreign films with subtitles if they're trying to learn a new language. If you want to learn how to speak British English of a certain kind, then this is the perfect vehicle for it.
And if you want to learn how to use emojis and have someone teach you, we have 2 seasons worth of people explaining to elders how to use emojis properly, or not that properly, if Freddie's explaining it to you.
Well, quite. I think the language of the show is a fascinating aspect of it, too, because in theory, it's meant to replicate how we all communicate, or how many of us at least communicate online on social media and so on. But it also feels quite contrived and artificial, and that's by design, because you can't just give your unfiltered thoughts. Everything you say has to be carefully calculated to see how it's going to appeal to the people you're talking to. And I also think that the way that people are conscious of the cameras as well, is that you want to come across as well, not just to your fellow contestants, but to other people watching at home. So the things you say, it's more calculated in that sense. And I think that feeds into the language that's used as well, where I don't know if people these days actually use that many hashtags in their group chats or whatever, but the hashtag per minute ratio on this show is truly something to behold.
I'm very curious to see if the American version has as many hashtags as the British. Hopefully a little bit less. Hopefully.
The Brits really do overdo it. And I don't know if that suggests something about our national character or if it's just the people they have on these casts. But it's definitely a much different kind of online banter, if you want to call it that, than you see from a lot of people.
I think that's what's going to be fascinating between the UK and US version is the different ways we communicate. I did watch a little bit of the preview that they had on YouTube, and already I'm seeing even like the way they just casually jump into circle chat. It's a lot different, I feel like, than the US one. And I don't know how to actually like put it to words necessarily what that difference is. And also I don't want to go into spoilers since at this point we haven't seen the full episode, but it definitely has a different vibe, yet it is classic circle, such a natural jump into it. It feels very in place. And also they are literally in the same apartments as season two. So you can find yourself wondering who lives in whose apartment.
That's one thing that maybe has gone understated about the US version is they are still in the exact same complex over in Manchester in the UK. So they've flown all of these Americans to Northern England. And that might be an interesting twist after the people are evicted to just let them loose on the streets of Manchester and let them try and fend for themselves and survive.
And also like a genius cost savings for the circle, or like a way to do it, which is like, we're going to license it out. We still have the building. Like, why not? I mean, if they had filmed Love Island not at the same time as the UK one, maybe they could have used the same villa instead of the one in Fiji they went to and then just got rained on every day.
Oh, wait, is Love Island permanently stationed in Fiji now as well?
So Love Island US was in Fiji, which I think was just sort of the CBS go-to of that, you know, we're in the pockets of Fiji there, versus Love Island UK is in Majorca, and they're always in the same villa. Well, they have been since season 3, so they've been sort of in a consistent location each season.
If all of these shows are going to be in Fiji at the same time, they may as well do a crossover episode, right?
Right. Listen, it's coming. They're all overlapping. That it's going to be like a challenge that you need to bring all this like palm fronds to a villa, and then that villa will eventually have to do some sort of weird couples bikini challenge. It's all coming. 2020, the vision is happening.
They do say that Survivor has a better record in terms of long-term relationships on the show than The Bachelor does. Maybe
I think
Love
any
Island
show
is,
does.
Well, quite, yes. But maybe Love Island can give it a run for its money.
I will say Love Island US is going decently strong, I think. There are two couples of the final four still together, which is more, I think, than most of us expected, and kind of the sleeper ones, not the top two. And I think there are a couple others kind of together, some other ones. So a semi-success for now.
Not to derail this and turn this into a Love Island podcast, which I'm sure there is a heavy demand for out there among the listener base, but what differences have you noticed between the UK Love Island and the US Love Island? Because that kind of comparison between one version of a show and another is always fascinating to me whenever it comes up.
Yeah, and you know what, when I did watch the US preview of The Circle, I thought back to how the US Love Island premiere felt in comparison. And there's something about, you know what, it felt more like the US Love Island felt like a, hey, we're making a US interpretation of this classic British show. The Circle US to me felt like, we are bringing in American players into a British game. It felt very seamless and just like, this is the normal cast. It didn't stick out to me versus, you know, Love Island US felt a little more like we're trying and we're doing everything by the book. And that's what The Circle is, but that's also the nature of The Circle. It's bizarre because it is like ultimately like we don't want Love Island US to sway away from the formula, yet it felt very duplicative as opposed to just a seamless, you're part of our game now.
Did the two Love Islands or Love's Island perhaps feel different in terms of how the contestants actually interacted with each other? So maybe were the gender dynamics different, or were people maybe more forward or more reserved in one version or another? Like stuff like that. Did that stick out at all?
I think that bigger issue is more of that our Love Island in the US is on CBS. It's going to be more censored. Not as much you can do. And it was a shorter time frame. There was a lot less going on compared to the UK, which at least in the Hulu version, a lot of cursing, a little more implied sexual relations on camera, a little more freedom than the US one. I think it's by nature of just network.
Yeah. Love Island After Dark. You know, if you want the premium content, you have to cross the pond. But I do wonder how the pacing is going to be different for the US version too, because I believe it's either 4 episodes a week over 3 weeks or 3 episodes a week over 4 weeks. Either way, I think it rounds out to about 12 episodes, maybe with an additional finale or something in there as well. Whereas when you watch the UK version, that is a real commitment. If you want to get through an entire season, it's I think season 1 was 17 episodes, somewhere in that range. And these were often hour long episodes. Season 2 was 20 something episodes. So it is not easy to binge, even if, like me, and I suspect like you, you're watching at like 1.25 or 1.5 speed back to back without stopping. It's just a lot of time that you need to spend with your nose at the grindstone there. Whereas the US version maybe is going to feel a little more snappy, a little more fast paced, and maybe it won't have some of the games or the other twists that the UK version uses as a padding almost.
That's always the hardest speed bump to get everybody over. Is if they want to watch it, when I tell them that it's like 18 one-hour episodes, that seems like a lot. Now, that said, a regular season of television, if you're going to binge watch, you know, an old season of Grey's Anatomy or Law and Order, they're 22 episodes of 1 hour too. And for the record, I actually watch them on regular classic speed, no double time speed or anything.
Oh, you're a true fan. Yes.
I'm a true fan. Also, I just think I don't know how to do it. I guess I'm old. I don't know. Podcasts I can speed up. TV at a normal pace.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, I think that is a good change, because to me, the times when the season lulled a little bit and where I was losing my focus was when, you know, one of the contestants that had just come in was sent back out through the revolving door, and there was a game that wasn't really too interesting, didn't stir up the drama between players, and it felt like they were just biding their time until something new happened. And with the US version, if it can be sleek in the way that the American versions of shows often are, then I think that would be a big improvement overall. The issue maybe, though, is that if there's just less time for the players to get to know each other, then you could end up with a season that looks very different, where one thing you note with both season one and season two in the UK is you have this initial cohort that goes into the house. A few of them get voted out in the first few episodes because some of them have to. And then there's a new batch of people that slowly trickles in, and most of them are gone in the middle of the boot list. And then when you get to the end of the season, it's usually the people who were there at the beginning. So for season one in the UK, and I guess we'll issue the spoiler alert now just before I recite the entire boot list to people. But we are assuming that you have seen the season, know the winners, know the twists and so on. So back away now if that's not your thing. But in season one, we have Dan, Sean, Freddie and Alex, all of whom were there from the very start as the final four. And then for season two, the winner is Paddy, who came in kind of halfway through. But otherwise, it's Woody, James / Sammy, Tim and Georgina. And again, those are the OGs. They're the people who were there from the beginning and who we know the best and have grown to love the best. And Ella as well, who came in, I think, episode four, which is basically at the start.
And that's a really common trope I've seen, and not to keep, you know, dredging up the Love Island of it, but when you do have these shows where you have a rotating cast, you do latch on to those originals. And that's kind of, you could even say the same with, you know, an actual scripted television show, that there are certain characters that come in and out, but your favorites are the ones from day one. Who are your favorite characters from Lost? It's kind of the people who are in the original thing. Nobody's favorite characters are the tailies. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mike Bloom. I don't know if people actually like the tailies. My guess was no. But, you know, it's that original batch, so it's hard to get rid of them, so to say. And I think that one thing that season two of The Circle introduced a bit, but ultimately because of the way the rankings happened, it didn't necessarily boot anybody, but they did allow a little bit more public interaction this time. I don't think the public straight up voted anybody out, though, now that I think of it. But that would be a way, I guess, that you could try to get some of those originals out. But I think also the fans kind of latch onto them as well, that they would keep them around.
And when I try to unpack my feelings about the various casts, it's often hard for me to tell if I like someone more because they are just, by my standards at least, a more interesting character, or if it's just they've been there the longest and that's why I've grown attached to them. And I do the same with the other people if their roles were reversed. So season one, for instance, Mairead was a superstar, a shining beacon who came in the middle of the season, was quickly evicted three episodes later, but really made an impression in her time there. But some of the others in the middle, they didn't, you know, they maybe had one moment that was interesting, but didn't really do too much. And then season two was quite stark for that as well, I thought. Whereas I mostly liked the people who were there initially, and then also at the very end, like Freddie, love him or hate him, you know, you have an opinion about him. It's impossible to stay neutral. Alex / Kate was you kind of the perfect front man or front woman for the season. And then Sean and Dan, we got to know over time. And then season two, you had Tim, who was just this tremendously big character.
Oh, the best. Yes. I'm such a Tim stan. And I know that the public turned, or by public, I mean, I think some of the Twitter fans, because I don't know how the UK felt in the end, but I know people kind of turned on Tim down the line, but I just felt he was so authentically himself beginning to end, and to see his relationships flourish. And now that there's post-show and you see social media of how they're on, to see him have such strong bonds with particularly Woody and Ella, it's really nice to see someone, especially when they're older and they're in this whole other generation, and then someone in the younger generation being inspired by somebody much older than them. It's it's so powerful. That's why I love this show.
Yeah, it is really heartwarming. And judging by that fan favorite voting at the end, I think the public at large still is very into Tim. I know that especially some of the North American fans took a disliking to him because it seemed like he was getting quite self-righteous at the end with his talk of morality and how to play the game with integrity and so on. But that is a very British attitude towards the show, and a lot of the some of the fandom for Tim, or at least some of the backlash towards James or Sammy, was driven by this feeling that, like, that's just not how you do this. Like, he's so manipulative, he's so scheming. Why can't you just kind of play it in a more straight up, fair way? And that attitude seems so alien to American viewers who have been conditioned by, you know, 40 seasons now of Survivor, however many of Big Brother, and so on and so forth. Like, that attitude seems so antiquated. Whereas in the UK, if anything, that might be the majority opinion for a lot of these games.
I think the big thing that I'm curious to see how American audiences will react is to the catfishers, because even I've had my debates internally of, like, am I rooting for a catfish to win, or do I want them to get caught? Because it is a weird concept that, especially, like, Kate won, you know, Alex won as Kate. And I could see that being, like, here more like more about the duping and that this person got away with it, as opposed to, like, that they form the relationships, that the goal isn't, like, that he did it as a lie. It was that his goal was to be voted most popular, and Alex felt that the way he would be popular is if he was his girlfriend, not himself.
Yeah, that's an interesting distinction to try to pass, where if you're a catfish, by definition, you're being deceptive. But that's, I think, seen as more allowed because that's what the format of the show encourages. Like, that's kind of the point, is you get to choose a persona to play. So who cares if that's not who you actually are, because we understand that. Whereas if in the course of either being that catfish or being yourself, you play the game in a manipulative way, then that's seen as something that reflects on your personal character with all of that entails.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, like, in season one, the reason that Kate ended up winning was because, not because Kate was a catfish, was that Kate and Dan had formed such a bond, and it wasn't because, like, just Dan, I guess Dan sort of got duped, but Dan and Kate formed a friendship, and he rated her higher than the other two, and everybody went into that finale, I think, pretty much giving each other one star. And then Dan gave Kate a high score. So I think the thing that will be interesting is to see, will U.S. audiences react to it as it's a popularity contest, be who you want, or is it going to turn into, like, a can you catch the catfish kind of game, which I hope isn't what it is. And I think that because we have the show Catfish, and that's what they do, it's sort of your nature. And even, like I said, I had to get past that, because part of me is like, you've got to get them. I was, like, rooting so hard for Katie, aka Jay, to get caught in season two, mostly because Jay was awful at being himself, in quotations. But, you know, it'll be a learning experience, and I think it'll be really cool to see a new audience latch onto the show, and then hopefully when it comes to season two, adapting to fit the needs of what the viewers want.
Yeah, we've had a few different types of catfish across the different seasons now. And what struck me about Alex and Kate, which I think is the prototypical example now of how to succeed as a catfish in the circle, is Alex is this fantastically compelling character for TV, and his chosen persona in Kate was engineered to be as bland as possible, really.
Yes. Like,
as inoffensive as she could be, or he could be, and that's what set Freddy off when he realized
on the fence.
Yes. Freddy's someone who cannot control himself or present any kind of sanded down version of himself, whereas on season two, I think the defining catfish was James and Sammy, where James always seemed like a bit of a cheeky chappy, as he would put it, someone who he would be kind of fun to watch. But Sammy initially began as this the single mom who was just a sweetheart and everyone loved her and no one had a bad word to say about her, and then had this amazing heel turn towards the end of the season where everyone started distrusting her, and she became this power player who engineered that final vote to go in their side's favor. And so that persona overwhelmed what little we knew of James, and that was definitely Sammy, whereas Kate was always Alex, I thought.
Oh my God, Kate was the whole time. Like, I would like to think if I were playing that I would be like, that is a mom being a guy, because it was just like, I'm not even like as young as however old Jay was supposed to be. It just felt so like, hey there, fellow kids, all the time. I actually watched the episode earlier today when I was prepping for this, of when they got rid of Kate, aka Jay, and everyone was like, is it gonna be Jay's mom? And how like everybody lost it. And that was like such a great moment though. And that's the fun of it is, and I think that's the other side that we talk so much about the game itself that we sometimes forget the cool part, which is they never meet until you're blocked. And then you get to meet one person and what like a revelation that can be, whether it's, you know, two people maybe who are flirting, or, you know, drastic reveals like when Aiden goes to see her friend Kate, and Kate is Alex. I love those moments though. And seeing Jay meet Sammy was a huge moment of them realizing also the almost the balance of the force of their catfish, you know.
The season one finale where Dan sees Alex for the first time, it's just such, you could pinpoint the exact moment where his heart broke in half, right?
Yeah, it was like Simpsons thing, yes, where they pause, yeah, and I'm like, oh my gosh, oh, that's the reveals are what makes the circle so epic, because I just don't think any of the current shows that we have in the U.S. for reality have that level of like a drastic reveal. Big Brother, we know what's going to happen. You know who's going home. Survivor tries, and there's some surprise to it, but there's also stuff that it's pretty, you know, predictable at times. But the circle always gets you because you don't really know necessarily who they're going to see. And even if you do, you don't know what their reaction's going to be, especially if they want to go see their catfish besties.
Yeah, and so in season one, there wasn't really explicit alliances per se. Like, there were clearly your Freddie and Sean are besties, as they reminded us 10 times an episode. And then Dan is always going to give 5 stars to Kate because of course he is. So you had some really close friendships verging on relationships, but it wasn't like codified as alliances. And I think part of that was reflected in the voting structure too, where it wasn't really a zero sum thing. Like, if you wanted to give everyone 5 stars, you could give everyone 1 star, you could try and give more stars to your friends and reflect how much you actually like them, or you could say, hey, this is a competition, I always want to be near the top, have my name in the mix, everyone else is getting 1 star and they can like it or leave it. Whereas for season two, you couldn't play it safe by giving everyone 5 stars, you had to make your preferences pretty clear by ranking people, and there was some tactical voting involved, especially at the very end. But then even by season two, you had this clear line in the sand where you had Ella, Woody, and Tim, and then Sammy tried to like rally the troops against them, and it seemed a lot more cutthroat even within the space of going from one season to the next. And it's always fun to see in the early stages of a show like this, kind of before any precepts are really formed, like how people approach that, because it was often said about the early seasons of Survivor, right? Like in Borneo, people were just there figuring things out as they went, and then very quickly people realize, okay, this is how you play the basic strategy of the game, and then the truly smart players are able to like move one step beyond that.
Yeah, and that's really why, and what's great is the circle did still deliver season two, but sometimes these kind of new premises are really like lightning strike in the bottle once, and that there's a magic thing, but then after that, like you can't put it back in, it's hard to get past it. But really it just set the stage for, okay, how do we take this to the next level? How do we ensure that we're not going into a finale with everyone giving each other 1 star and potentially a 4-way tie? You know, how do we force a line in the sand? And what's an interesting concept that I don't know if you listened to when Freddie was interviewed on the Taran show, but Freddie had talked a little on, you know, how the sausage was made, so to say, with the show, and they can't talk about the game. And that's another thing that I believe is a rule in British Big Brother as well. You can't talk about alliances. You can't talk about voting. So you have to be very clever in a way if you are talking about how you're going to vote together, which is also a very cunning and exciting way to play. But we don't necessarily get to see that level. But I will tease in the U.S. preview. I felt like there was somebody essentially saying, let's make an alliance in that premiere, which is very interesting. I cannot wait. I'm like counting down for the clock to strike midnight. And it's not because I care anything about the year 2020, but because if that show was up at 12:01 a.m. Eastern time, that is how I'm kicking off 2020.
You're firing up Netflix and diving in.
Mm-hmm. And so I live my life. It's very exciting New Year's. And that's what I'm here for. I'm here for the circle. Let's go. Let's bring it.
Yeah, that's your equivalent of the fireworks or the big ceremonial ball dropping or anything like that.
I don't need to see Carson Daly. I don't need to see Anderson Cooper or anything. I need to see the glimmering circle kind of beaming in its beautiful incandescent colors. And I need the, well, I don't know who their narrator will be. The host is Michelle Buteau, and she's a great comedian. And she was on like Best Week Ever way back in the day when that was on. So I've always enjoyed her. So I think she'll be a good addition.
Look, she is a charming personality, and I'm sure she will do an excellent professional job. However, no one can compare to the announcer on the UK version of The Circle, who I would say has made a name for herself. I don't think anyone knows her actual name. She might take on the status of like the Jeopardy announcer, right?
Who I did look her up today. I looked her up.
And she doesn't...
I want to see if she looked like... No, she's not what... I looked and I was like, I'm sorry, I think I looked up the wrong person.
Well, that's the thing, is she has one of those iconic voices who, whatever she does actually look like in person, is going to seem so jarring, because there's like there's no one who should have that voice, if that makes sense. It's like who is even meant to sound like that? I get that a lot, surprisingly. Like I, as someone who is told that I sound like I'm 50 years old, I relate to that. You know, it's relatable content.
I'd give you a strong 45, Dom.
Well, thank you. I'm 45 at heart.
Just like my man Christopher. He was what, a 65-year-old retired antique dealer?
Yes, and absolutely not a 22-year-old girl from South Wales. Of course not. How dare you?
So actually, that brings me to something about the catfish, which is not that we want to go deep into like our own personal things of how we'd play, but why do you think someone... And I think it's kind of obvious, but like, what do you think makes a strong catfish contender versus the weaker ones who get sussed out and then voted out because they're not connecting either?
That really is the central question. And one thing I like about the show from like the sociological standpoint is to see just how easy it is for different people to adopt different personas. And it's not the same as like having to live it in real life where you can't turn it off, and where it is almost like, let's say you're pretending to be Christopher in this case. If you're Christopher in The Circle, there's always going to be a level of suspicion about it just because of the format of the show. So you don't necessarily actually get the same treatment, for better or for worse, as someone who, when you meet them in real life, you can tell they are actually a 65-year-old retired antique dealer. So if you want to see how, you know, the age gap plays into how people treat each other, you kind of get like a refracted version of that on The Circle, and not necessarily one that's true to real life, but it's still interesting to analyze and to watch.
And I wonder, and this is like a broader question, which is we've seen a lot of people, I mean, it was a unique strategy to play an older person, but I think that really the strategy, it seems, is probably to play younger, because reality show casting skews younger. And there was always a part of me that I think about constantly when I watch, what would be my strategy? What would I do? Who could I, like, what would I do? And one of my like ideas I have, but I'm like, this is to play a losing game, would be to see what you do if you do age yourself up, change a fair amount of who you are, to see, just to kind of make the point, which is sort of what, what was it, Josh in season 2? But Josh was just really bad at connecting with people. I forget who played Josh.
Oh, that was Buseo.
Yes, Buseo. Josh just didn't pan out because it just, there was no connection. And maybe that's where the people that are catfishing and don't do well, where they seem to lack, is that there's cracks in their stories, but also they're just not making the emotional connections and the friendships that they need to. And maybe it's because they're trying too hard with cover stories, as opposed to it being very fluid in what you can lie about, you know, little lies, as opposed to these massive, you know, backstories and infrastructures you need.
And Josh maybe illustrates the danger in taking these examples as gospel. So she went in saying, look, if I present who I am, which is this this mid-20s black woman, that's going to be received very differently from if I'm a mid-20s white guy. And so I'm going to kind of wear the mantle of that privilege and see how far it gets me and just how beneficial that truly is. And she came away quite reassured that actually it seemed like she wasn't being treated too differently. But it's hard to tell if, like, if Josh was real and almost better at living the reality of that persona, if he would actually have been treated better, or if, you know, it, just how perceptible subtly that lack of reality was, even if it wasn't explicitly called out at any point.
Yeah, like Josh, aka Buseo, just had a hard time connecting beyond like her actual interest. And she had an interest in music and some of that stuff. But then it was like trying to create these like personas based on these other fake, you know, things. Didn't Josh get caught in a lie about like not liking the winter skiing? And it was like, but you're snowboarding in your picture. It's something crazy.
Oh, and James getting caught like not knowing about Frozen or something.
Yes. Oh, and yeah, that is definitely like a mom thing. Or today was the one I watched. Again, I've watched a lot of episodes in the last day. We talked about it last night, and I did watch like 7 or 8 episodes to like prep. And it was when they did season one, the trivia game, and Christopher knew who Little Mix was, but not Kate, which was a huge, you know, red flag in the game. And I think that was actually a defining point of when at least Freddie was very sure Kate was fake.
Yeah.
Which is always fun. I love the games on the show, by the way. I think the games are so much fun.
Yeah, the games can be hit or miss, but when they work, they're almost the perfect instrument for stirring up drama, because yeah, the circle is different from Survivor or Big Brother in that usually it's those face-to-face confrontations that are the backbone of the drama on the show. Whereas on the circle, the worst that you get is some slightly harsh words exchanged in a group chat, and then someone leaves the group chat.
Nothing harsher, though, when it says somebody's left the group chat.
Which is very cutting and devastating in real life, I'm sure. But I think the circle itself also acts as this kind of mediating force, where it's just so hard to like have an actual blowout argument with someone when you have to relay it verbally through the circle, right? It just kind of,
yeah. And even when you watch, sometimes you don't know when, especially in the case of Freddie, who is constantly yelling every thought out of his head at the TV, which ones are being translated into circle messages and which ones are just him screaming into the universe. And in that game in particular, actually it was the painting game actually, where Freddie really lost his mind and let everyone have it, which was fantastic. But I really remember watching it and going like, he's just yelling this into the void, but he was not that time. He really laid into Kate.
Yeah, Freddie has a lot of emojis and capital letters and exclamation marks, so he can find a way to express himself, certainly, but it's not with the same sheer volume that it probably would be.
Facts are facts, Dom. Facts are facts.
Yes. I do wonder if Alex or Kate kind of got away with something with the Little Mix thing, where because Christopher was also caught in the same thing, it maybe drew more attention to him or to Sinead than to Kate, who usually if that's your first offense, not knowing who Little Mix is going to raise a few eyebrows. Whereas there, it's like, how on earth does Christopher know who Little Mix is?
So bizarre. Then it was like my grand niece went to their concert, and it was, oh, Christopher. Yes. So I loved when Christopher had to try to explain who Hugh Jackman was.
I do love it when the catfishes have these meticulously prepared notebooks with all the details they could possibly need.
It's fantastic.
But I think there is a crucial distinction there between the elements of their persona. So if I'm pretending to be Christopher, then what does it mean for me to be Christopher? Like, my how many family members do I have? Like, what's my professional history and so on? Versus, what is it like to be in that group? Like, how can I pretend to be a 65-year-old man in general, you know? And same thing with, you know, like Katie and Jay or Alex and Kate. Those are the more interesting ones to me, where it's like, how do I bridge this divide, which is relatable for anyone watching, really. Like when Alex is invited into the girls chat and has to kind of learn to code switch properly on a dime. Like, that's the kind of stuff which makes the show really fun to watch for me.
Now, here's the important question, and I just Googled this. In U.S. dollars, what is the cost of a brick? We know that Jay did not know the answer.
Do you mean the cost of a home shopping spree at the brick or a brick?
I think a single brick that a builder would use.
on that one.
Yeah. Wouldn't you just make up a price? That's where, when you sit on it too long, I just would have been like $5.
Yeah, it's not like they're going to know.
Yeah, they just want an answer, and then he just sat there for a long time.
Or you can throw it back at them. Like, do you mean the wholesale price? Do you mean, like...
it was a struggle, but that's where I think that it's one thing, and I think they obviously cast, so they don't want people who are just going to, like, slightly exaggerate the truth. They need, like, big things. But, like, I think the difference between playing and playing to win is, like, having a lie that is easier to pull off and, like, fill in the blanks. Like, I think why James was so masterful at Sammy was that he was doing his mom, and he was just taking her stories and her things and just putting that into his own character. And I think that when you base your catfish on someone close to you, you stand a better shot. Again, even though I've been ragging on Katie, aka Jay, but also, you know, Jay spent a lot of time talking about how great his mom was. So
yeah, I think that's the perfect recipe. Is if your circumstances mean you kind of have a view of a life experience that most people in your demographic maybe wouldn't. So if you didn't grow up with a single mom like Sammy, as Jay had, or as James had, sorry, then, you know, if you were just some other guy in their mid-20s, then it would be a lot harder to pull that off. Whereas he uniquely among that group would have the direct experience needed to do that. So I think also just in general, like, it's the same skills that would make you good at a social strategy game in general. It's like that empathy, that ability to think on your feet and kind of get along with anyone and not get caught out in a lie too easily. I think it's, you know, you have to know your facts, right? Like, Alex needs to know all the stuff that he needs to survive in girls chat. But just in general, like, the same skills, like, I think Alex would be a great Survivor player, for instance, even though he's a little shifty. Yeah, it might be a little sus. I think he would do really well. I think James would probably do really well as well. Just, I think those same skills really do carry over.
I think actually now when I think on it too, and I think that we talk a lot about the really like loud and really, and like the catfish, but the people who played really strong games that just sort of, it kind of gets swept by at the end, like Sean's game was actually fantastic. Sean was friends with everybody, and Sean was friends with Dan. Just Sean's friendship was stronger with Freddie versus Dan, who was besties with Kate from day one. But Sean is a super underrated player of the circle, I think. Really did well.
Let's talk about that first season cast then, because when we get into the end game, we have Alex, who is the ultimate catfish. We have Freddie, who seals the show.
Half catfish too.
Freddie's in an interesting situation too, where he is trying to play a different personality, but because he's Freddie, he can't do anything by half.
He
leads into it, and instead of being the normal hypersexual Freddie, he is instead the manly, straight, incredibly loud hypersexual Freddie in like the other direction. So both versions of Freddy were a lot to handle. Even one by itself would be a lot, but both together was really dominated the show. But then you had, on the other end, like Sean and Dan are just like the straight man, so to speak, the kind of quieter, normal personalities who are just authentically being themselves. And with Sean, you also had some of this where she was like, I'm going to intentionally use the less glamorous pictures of myself. I'm going to be this plain Jane version of me. But she was still, personality-wise, just kind of being true to who she was. So you had two really hammy actors alongside two of the more just unremarkably normal people we've seen on the show.
Right, and it's season two. Georgina is a perfect example of somebody that she also started sort of with the, I'm going to keep it kind of like high level, and then revealed a whole level of herself with her Crohn's disease and her Crohn's bag. And, you know, she really bonded with Judy, aka Richard. But really, it was her. She was strong friends with everybody in that group. Everybody really considered her, besides Woody, I think, like a best friend in the circle, which is a mm-hmm. fascinating thing to be that kind of friend. And I think that it's a gameplay that is very admirable in the circle and really like what you are trying to do. And it just is sometimes that one or two little bit of friendships that push someone over the edge. And that's why, you know, in the end, someone like Patty won, because Patty came in a little later, but Patty formed really strong bonds with everybody in that final five, except for Woody. Woody had like two friends and stuck with them. But I love Woody. I love everybody. That's why I love this show, because even if somebody's game drove me nuts or their character was not my fave, like, it all led to this bigger picture of learning and different personalities. It's just unlike anything else that's currently on the air, and it's so different.
Yeah, that season two cast is complete aces. It's a really fun batch of characters. I had kind of the opposite take on Paddy's win, though, because it seemed like by the end, when it did come down to just these two groups of three and their tactical voting, it was like, well, you know, from the Paddy side of things, Sammy maybe is most likely to get votes and the biggest threat. So why don't we just redirect that all of that support towards Paddy?
That's true.
And then yeah. with the other side, it's like, well, we need to suppress the Ella, Woody, Tim vote show as much as possible. So you're almost guaranteed to get the least offensive person from one of the two sides taking home the title, which I know a lot of the viewers weren't happy with, that it wasn't the big fan favorite in Tim. It wasn't the underdog with the Crone story in Georgina. It wasn't Woody, who everyone loved. It wasn't Ella, who was this really fun personality. It wasn't Sammy. It was the most nondescript person who also had his own underdog story, but one that no one else in the cast was aware of at that point.
Yeah, pretty much. That's actually a really solid point about really that at the end it can come down to almost like a vote split. And I think I kind of said it, like, season one was they did like all rank each other as ones. And then Dan gave Kate higher. It was like they were all pretty even on like going into that finale at like, you know, at all, like, I think, right?
Well, so when they revealed the votes finally, because people on Twitter were asking them to, and that's what they gave as the explanation is, well, you have been asking for this on Twitter, so here you go. They revealed the final vote shares, and what happened was people had kind of their own individual criteria for deciding who to give their support to. And so, as you mentioned, Dan gave Kate a 5 because he's always given Kate 5 stars, and he felt like after everything they'd gone through together, he couldn't deviate from that, whereas everyone else was voting a lot more tactically. And even the people that they were close friends with, they were like, okay, you're my close friend, so you get 3 stars instead of 2 or something. So Dan's one vote for Kate was so disproportionate compared to that
yes.
that really sent her ahead of the pack. But like Sean, for instance, I think it was about Kate, where she said, okay, I don't really like you as much as I like Dan, who's my close friend in here. Freddie's my BFF. I don't really know you as well. I don't really want you to win. So I'm going to give you 2 stars. Whereas the Freddie school of thought was, okay, you're a 1 star. You're a 1 star. And I like you. And we've been friends the entire game. So you can get 2 stars. you can get an extra star for your trouble. So if everyone is playing the same game and just giving everyone else 1 star, then you kind of reach an impasse. But when like Dan accidentally becomes a kingmaker because he's more willing to dole out the stars, and that's what hands the game to Alex, who he didn't even know was Alex at that stage.
Classic. That's what was great about it too, is that they rank them, then they go meet them, and it's this like, probably on top of everything, is that Dan is sitting there seething that all along he's been talking to this guy who he thinks is this gorgeous girl, and also that, oh, I just gave her all the money. Like, he had to have known that there was like, he was like, wait, I gave her 5, like, that's huge. And they've also been doing this show for 3 weeks at this point and done enough ratings at the time to know like what their numbers have been kind of balancing out and averaging out to be each week.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, you could tell that Dan felt like he was both a dupe and that he had been betrayed. And I think they're friendly now. They're fine with it. But at the time, he was in no mood to talk to Alex.
No, and I think that ultimately, any of us, we played, as much as we like to think, like, I can take it in stride, we would all be pissed if someone was duping us, especially, I'm guessing those two had a lot of, like, emotional conversations behind the scenes. You know, we're seeing the fun stuff and interesting stuff, but I'm sure, you know, there were a lot of things that were talked about that we're just not privy to that really would be, I could see Dan opening up on another level to Kate, because he considered her such a close friend. Whereas, you know, as you said earlier, Kate was designed to be like a bot that's just like, no, doesn't take sides, doesn't pick issues, just is agreeable, which is also smart to me. I take no offense in Kate's game. It's boring, but it's true, because everyone just wants someone who's going to pat you on the back and agree with you.
Yeah, and that is the paradox of any social game, really, is that the way to win often is to be kind of boring and nondescript and inoffensive, and that makes for bad TV. So as a TV producer, you have to find a way to kind of disentangle that and try and make it so the big characters can do well in the game sometimes. And in The Circle, you do that by having the person themselves in Alex, who's really fun and compelling to watch, and then their character in Kate, who is pretty boring, but the fact that Alex is playing her keeps her exciting, keeps her interesting. But you also have, in the case of season one, the star of the show, I think, who is clearly Freddie. So what is your stance on Freddie? Because he seems like you either love him or you hate him, and that's going to determine how you feel about the whole season, basically.
I love Freddie. Freddie, here's the one thing, I guess I could give a con, which is that sometimes I like my reality stars to be a little less obvious that they are on reality TV. And Freddie clearly knew, like, he went into this kind of like more of what's gone on a recent Big Brother. He had a catchphrase clearly in mind. Like, he had a lot of that stuff. But he made the show entertaining, because ultimately it's a bunch of people talking to a TV screen and then reading those messages back out loud. And if you're not going to share your honest personality and have fun with it and jump around, and I'm fairly sure Freddie never sat down that entire season, it would have been nothing. And I think it's, if you don't have a person like a Freddie season one, you don't have a Kate / Alex season one, the show isn't coming back for season two. We've had so many US shows that have come and gone, one and done, because, you know, just didn't pop. This pops.
And meanwhile, I guess the Freddie of season two is Tim, who is very different from Freddie and also very different from every other conceivable person. Like, Tim is his own unique special entity himself, and for Tim, he seemed more universally popular with the fans, and I think it's easier to handle the season as a whole if you're not a Tim fan. Like, even if you don't really, if you're not entertained by his shtick, the season is less about Tim than season one was about Freddie.
I definitely agree. I think there was a better balance in season two of different characters that were rootable and personalities you could latch onto that were so varied that it made the game really fun. I have to give major props to whoever is the casting department for The Circle. They find these gems of human beings there that it's just like, how have you not been on a reality show before? How have we not seen? I mean, I don't know, where do you scout Tim from? Did he apply? were you at a lecture and he was teaching it? Like, it's just remarkable the people they got. I mean, Ella is such a feisty, wonderful personality of just like a beam of an ray of sunshine. And she would have won that game. They were smart to get her out. I have high hopes for the US that, just based on the preview, I really did like the cast of US season one so far. I only have one that I dislike highly. And I also really loved like how diverse the cast is and how they're playing different angles. So I'm going to put all the faith that the same casting people found those kind of gems in the US.
Yeah. And on that season two cast, you also have Woody, who is far more composed than most 18-year-olds could ever really hope to be. Georgina, I think, is, as you said, like, just likable character with a good story. And then going back to Tim, there were some questions at the start of the season about is Tim a catfish because he seems so strange?
Oh my God, yeah.
They quickly realized that you couldn't script Tim even if you wanted to. And if you were going to be a catfish, you would be basically any other character. Like, how do you decide I'm going to be this mid-50s gay theology professor who
loves cats,
has colorful three-piece suits. Like, I don't know how you fashion that persona out of whole cloth, really. So Tim is the most authentic character in a way, which is why a lot of people loved him, and also why I think he kind of got away with murder, because you could never really doubt his authenticity. He just is Tim.
No. Well, you know, it was a really gut-punching moment in season two was when Tim did turn off. He didn't necessarily turn on the Scholar Squad, but he was in a bad spot. And when he voted Brooke out, and it wasn't against Brooke, it was just more of a, she keeps finding herself in the bottom. How long can I keep defending her? And that moment where Georgina was really furious with Tim, and you could see that she was just going to kind of maybe like tolerate him. That was really hard. That's what really is interesting and why I latch onto it, is because you do get with the UK format of the day-to-day airing, and you get to really know these people a lot better than your Survivor or your Big Brothers. Big Brother, maybe, actually, we know them too well, and they're just usually bad people. But you really latch onto them, and when their friendships break, you feel bad because you've grown attached to watching these relationships.
Yeah. If you go on the Wikipedia voting chart for season two, Tim has a Simon-esque run through this season where he goes second, first, second, second, third, which is, you know, below his average, first, second, first, and then tied for third in the final. Like, he, of all the times where he's eligible, he is only not in the top two one time.
And that was their one time to get him out. And who went? I actually have that page open as well. Who went instead of Tim?
Oh, that was... Was that,
oh, but at the influencers were Ella and Woody, so he was totally safe. His two besties.
So if anything, that was an even better round for him because his friends were in power and he didn't have to keep getting his hands dirty.
What a good cast. I'm just looking at all these names and stuff. What did you think of Beth and Jack coming as Joyce? Because those newbies had no chance of ever being voted into that game when it was a choice of, we're going to be a new couple and we're going to be a young single guy, or we're going to take two attractive people and make them into an elderly one.
Yeah. So Joyce as the Frankenstein amalgamation of the two of them was fun, but I thought individually they were kind of taking up spots in the season where they got evicted basically right away. And then they had maybe the most unlikely showmance that you could imagine as they were embodying Joyce.
So a little bit terrifying.
But that's the that's sometimes where the season lags a bit. But like Jan, for instance, is like, okay, Jan comes in and then she's back out the revolving door, and she was fun for her short time there, but she doesn't have time to get up to much or really establish herself. And maybe if the US version can avoid that, like if it's either more constant churn and the originals aren't as safe, or if they just have fewer cast members altogether, so they kind of keep it moving, then the whole thing might just feel a little bit different.
Yeah, I think it's hard too, especially when you introduce somebody in that you need to keep bringing players in ultimately, because that's what makes the show and the game fun. But when you get to that last week, they're all so connected already that's what's going to happen by default for anything you do, is like, well, you haven't been part of this experience, like, why should you be at the finale? I don't know how they'll ever fully get past that, but I think it's the nature of the game, which is a bummer, because somebody like Jan, who is fun, and if she came in earlier, I think would have had a better chance to last a while, or, you know, to have 2 weeks in the circle. Ultimately, she had 2 weeks in sequester, which is also a phenomenal premise of the show, which is that these people are held in sequester for 3 weeks, be it on the show or in holding until they can play the game.
And even before then, too, because Alex did a behind-the-scenes tell-all thing, or tell what I can, given the constraints of my NDA video. And one of the things he said was that even before they were officially all locked into sequester, they had to be kept separate for a while longer, just so the promotional stuff could happen and people couldn't, like, look them up or contact them on social media or anything like that. So there was just so much downtime, and you can see them kind of going stir crazy sometimes and just doing things for the sake of having something to do and to just like needle each other and to keep it interesting. That's one thing which I definitely plays into it, but it often, you know, but you don't see the downtime because why would they show it? So outside of these fleeting glimpses in like these interstitial shots, so it's easy to overlook the impact that has just in terms of how everyone's mental state is.
That's the thing too, is that I always, when somebody comes in late into the game and they are a catfish, that if I've had 2 weeks to sit around and do absolutely nothing, like you should, and maybe they don't allow them to, but like you should have a novel written about who your character is by that point, because what else are you doing? Because that's what they can't be out in the world, because then they would be able to see the show. So they're in, you know, holding or whatever you would want to call it. I mean, think out your strategy, come in stronger, come in swinging.
Mm-hmm. One thing that we didn't really see as much, but I hope we get to see on this upcoming season, is someone who is not a catfish, but is presumed to be one because they just come across as so shifty in their everyday interactions.
I actually thought, so one of my early faves, I really liked Karen, who is playing Mercedes. And essentially, I think Karen is just going to be herself, but is just putting a photo of a much more like standardly attractive girl. But I think that ultimately, right away, her photo that she picked to me was like, and I think they comment on this a little bit, not to go too spoilery, was it doesn't look real. Like it's really filtered out. It's face tuned. It's got like, I don't know, it looks like glitter coming off it. It's just so bad that like those kind of things, that if you pick a photo even that just looks too well done, you're going to be pointed at as a catfish. You got to pick an ugly photo, not too perfect.
No. So Mel, we are getting close to midnight. This is the 11th hour.
Oh my gosh, literally.
The season will be dropping very soon. I want to make sure you have time to get your snacks ready, prepare yourself, do any errands you need to do before you settle in for the night. What final thoughts do you have on the circle before we get you out of there for that?
I mean, we know everybody who's listening to this is already a fan. Keep being a fan and let's get everybody we can to watch it. Let's get it, you know, let's do that. What was it? The release of like, let's watch it for at least 2 minutes within the first 28 days. So it's the most popular show, but like, let's get everybody in on it. Let's share the social posts. Let's talk about it. Let's tweet about it. Let's tell your friends. You know, we watch so much junk on Netflix. It's really easy for that algorithm to miss something. So if we can all watch it, make it powerful, get others in on it, I think it can be the next big thing on Netflix.
I really hope so. Behind you and Kitten Rescues, which I've been binging this week, and there are some other good shows that are deserving of your time, but The Circle should be among them for sure.
I cannot wait. I'm just like, I'm buzzing.
I've heard that word more over the however many hours of watching The Circle than I have in 25 years in the UK combined. And that's true of most of the slang on the show, actually.
Yeah, I've learned in 2019, I really just learned so much about British reality television, even more than I knew before. And I just feel 2019 was a blessing of reality TV for us, for non-US, non-CBS properties.
You are a connoisseur of British reality TV. What do you think is quintessentially British about a show like this? Like, because people tend to be maybe more reserved or more or less aware of the cameras. What are the traits that you think, but accents aside, you could pick out as this is a British show, this is an American show?
Well, the accent sound, only because there really is like we've got this person, there's always an Essex person, and I not to go to that, but Essex is not just an accent. It's a lifestyle, it's a personality, it's a look. If there's not an Essex person, I don't even know if it's a British reality show, to be honest. Sometimes fashion, some people dress very normal, and sometimes I just don't know what passes for what is a fashionable female look. Well, there.
How are we incorporating Tim into all of this?
Oh, Tim is next level. If there's one thing I took from The Circle, it's live a life to be more like Tim. Be a kind person, be a good person, love everybody. That was what Tim is. And also make sure to respect people's cats, because you don't want to be like Judy, dare coming for Tim's cats.
I think Tim is the stereotype of me that exists in Colin's mind come to life somehow.
Yeah, you know what? I could see it. I think now if you were to, I think if you were to get on this next season of US Circle or maybe Canadian Circle, because I think it's going to start coming everywhere and that'll be good for us, is more circles everywhere, is that you should use Tim's photo, but be yourself and see if anybody notices.
And yeah, the Essex thing is worth noting because for season one of The Circle, a good half the cast is based in London. And to be fair, like the UK in general, and especially UK media, is so London centric that of course most of the people are going to be from London because that's just how it works. And it isn't like the criticism that people had of, well, half of this Survivor cast is from the same part of California or whatever, where that kind of means something. Like, London is so varied that that doesn't tell you much. Whereas season two is actually a lot more diverse location-wise, too. Like, there are two or three London people, but beyond that, no one really comes from the same location at all.
No, and that's, like, going back to it, the Love Island, for a while, I maintained that, like, the only way you could win the show is be an Essex native or something, but it's really diverse and spread out, and you really kind of understand and pick up the different kind of cultures of different areas of the UK. And I think that's similar with US, and I wonder to what extent we'll get that. And I really wonder that one of the things we didn't really talk on was the news feed, where The Circle drops in a bit of news to keep you posted on the world and it generates conversation. And I wonder to what extent we're going to get some interesting sociological or political conversations about things in The Circle. Like, how deep are we going to go and what's going to come out of it? Because that did generate a lot of conversation. You know, anytime they mentioned Brexit, be it if they understood it or for some of them didn't understand it, you know?
Well, yeah. And especially with how diverse this cast is and how fractious the political climate is, I imagine those discussions could get quite heated, or at least quite intense, quite fast.
I could even see that as a personality that you would choose to have or hide, even, you know, in the game. Oh, I'm not going to talk about this, but I'm not going to talk about my politics, but I'm actually a very strong believer in this side or that side. It could, that there's so much that you can do with The Circle, and that's why we love it. The boundless, endless potential that there is.
Yeah, I think we're still in the early stages and we're seeing the bare bones version. But as you say, there is so much room to build on top of that that I'm excited to see in a few years' time just where the franchise has gone and what countries have picked it up and just how far it's traveled.
It's going to be The Circle's taking over the world, and I'm going to make sure that we all start getting everybody up on this fantastic show now that it's easier to access than a weird YouTube playlist that I keep sending via text message.
So, Mel, if people want to open a private chat with you, where can they be doing that?
If you want a private chat with me, you can open a Circle chat on Twitter at MelGotServed, Instagram at MelGotServed. Circle chat with me. Let's group chat. Let's open private chats. You know, let's talk about the news feed. Let's do it all.
And if you want to slide into the DMs over here, I'm at DomHOV on Twitter, as always. And feel free to block me if you like, but at least visit me after you do and just give me a reason. But for now, I think that'll do it. So, Circle, close group chat with Mel, please.
Oh, I've been blocked.